Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Why do some American combat veterans suffer from the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder and others do not? Why do other societies in the world, which are similar to ours, have much lower rates of PTSD in their combat veterans? And why in these most recent wars that we're having, Iraq and Afghanistan, why is it causing PTSD rates so much higher than we've ever seen before? And these are really important questions, not just dealing with issues of our people in our military, but also our entire society. And best-selling author, journalist, anthropologist Sebastian Younger stares into the abyss. And he asked this question with his latest book, Tribe, on homecoming and belonging. And Sebastian, hi, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
Our phone lines are open. Please join our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. You can email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And Sebastian, the title of the book, Tribe, and there is a negative connotation in our society for tribe, because we tend to be a society that exalts the individual over the tribe. And does that get to the heart of why you think that we have some sort of things are out of kilter?
You know, actually, I think there's a positive connotation to the word tribe as well, in the sense that, yes, our society does emphasize the individual over the collective good. And there's a real longing in people for connection, for community. And another way of saying tribe is saying community. Is the same thing. And so there's a lot of benefits to having an individualistic society. Affluence permits that kind of thing. The poorer people are, the more they have to act collectively in order to survive. But we know that as affluence goes up in the society, as individualism goes up, their suicide rate goes up, depression goes up. As societies modernize and urbanize, even the rate of schizophrenia goes up. So there's a real cost to be paid for the many wonderful things that actually do come with affluence and with individualism.
And so you've noticed that, and it's documented, that the rates of PTSD with our combat veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, much higher than we've seen before. And there's a trend line. As we've modernized warfare, it continues to accelerate.
Yeah, I mean, warfare, in a sense, has not changed that much since the invention of the machine gun. Every war that the U.S. has fought since the American Civil War, casualties have gone down, thank God. The intensity of the combat has gone down. But the rate of psychological trauma has gone up. So these recent wars have much lower casualty rates, much lower intensity of combat than Vietnam did, and roughly three times the disability rates. So the question is why? The two lines should be going in the same direction if they're not. One possible explanation, which I explore in my book Tribe, is about the effect of community on our well-being. And my theory, and I think I found some pretty good evidence for it, is that the long-term traumatic reactions that you see in people, short-term trauma produces a short-term reaction that almost everyone has. It's healthy, it's adaptive, it's not a problem, it helps you survive. But long-term chronic PTSD is not adaptive, it's not healthy, and it can be deadly. So what you find is that the rate of long-term trauma isn't actually determined by the intensity of the trauma. It affects it. But what also determines the long-term trauma is the kind of society you come back to. And if you come back to a close, cohesive, intimate, communal society of the sort that humans evolved to live in for hundreds of thousands of years, if you come back to that kind of connected society, people get over their trauma reactions quite quickly. And if you come back to the kind of individualistic modern societies that we're frankly lucky to be living in, one of the downsides is that about 20% of people really just don't recover or take a very long time to recover from trauma.
You write in the book your own experience of dealing with you call short-term post-traumatic stress disorder. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, keep in mind, PTSD is not just the provenance of of soldiers and war. I mean, life is traumatic to people. And there are car accidents, there's violent assaults, there's spouses dying of cancer. You know, I mean, you know, life's hard, and everyone can be traumatized by life. You know, it doesn't have to be on a battlefield, and so. What you get is when a person's been traumatized, you get a short-term reaction that is adaptive. It helps you survive. I mean, if you've been in danger, if your life's been in danger, you want to jump at sudden noises. When that car backfires, you want to jump. You don't want to be blasé about that. You want to sleep lightly. You want to have nightmares that remind you of the thing that's dangerous to you. You want to be a little bit depressed. It keeps you out of the action. It keeps you safe. You want to be prone to anger because it makes you ready to fight. That's all good and normal and the product of our evolution. What you don't want is the sort of long-term rut that some people get stuck in of living with a lifelong traumatic reaction that really is crippling and extremely painful.
Yeah, but all those characteristics that you talked about, being jumpy and quick to anger and nightmares, that might be, I guess, good for you if you are on the Serengeti and trying to stay alive. But if you are working a 9-to-5 in a cubicle farm, that's not so good.
Exactly. I mean, you're precisely right. And here we are walking around in cubicle farms with the bodies and minds of hominids that are adapted to life in the Serengeti.
And when we have a tribe, these people that were on the Serengeti and they were in these tribes, they probably never came in contact with any more than 24 or 30 people their entire life. And I really got to know those other people in that tribe very well. And, what they said, their word was important, how they behaved was important. And you would always be known for the dumbest thing you've ever done in your entire life. And here we are now in a society where we're dealing with millions of people. And it's so much easier to slip away from who you actually are and just get by on a brand.
Yeah, I mean, what I found was that humans typically, for hundreds of thousands of years, lived in groups of 30, 40, 50 people, which, not coincidentally, is about the size of a platoon. So when soldiers go off to war, they're having an experience very close to our evolutionary past. They're living in that just about the right size group. They're sleeping together, they're eating together, they're doing tasks and missions together. That reproduces our evolutionary past quite closely. And when soldiers say that they miss war, many of them do say that. It's so surprising to civilians. It's in some ways so politically incorrect to say that. But many soldiers miss war. And I think, they're not sociopaths. What they're missing is that very intense and natural and ancient human connection that happens in a platoon. And then they're brought home, they're released into the great American suburb where everyone's sleeping in an air-conditioned room by themselves and, driving from their carport to their job 50 miles away, what have you. And it's just really not how we were psychologically adapted to live. There's a lot of upsides to that kind of modern society, but the downsides need to be understood because they really affect just about everybody.
All right, we're talking about the book Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. We're speaking with the author, Sebastian Younger. If you've got a question or a comment as we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, people, it's not the fighting in the war, but coming back home could be the cause. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Post-traumatic stress disorder in American combat veterans. The numbers are staggering. Why? Why do some of our warriors get it and others do not? Maybe it's not the war, but the homecoming that causes this condition. Is there a clue in tribal society about loyalty and belonging that explains why we are stronger when we come together, even under the worst of circumstances? This is a theme that's explored in a new book from Sebastian Younger. He is a best-selling author, anthropologist. He wrote The Perfect Storm and War, he takes a very intense look, but it's a short little book, but it's this packed with all sorts of great ideas worth reading, talking about, mulling over. And let me get to a caller here. Emmanuel is on the line. Emmanuel, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a psychiatrist. I work at the VA. I think the most obvious reason that the incidence of PTSD has gone up is that the compensation structure of the VA has changed in the sense that claims for PTSD are almost never denied, and once you get a diagnosis of PTSD as a service connection, you get sometimes up to $1,000, $2,000 a month for the rest of your life. And when you incentivize people to report certain symptoms, then that's what will happen. And this compensation structure was not in place for World War II or the Korean War or the Vietnam War. But this change has occurred in the 80s and the 90s.
Okay, Emmanuel, thank you for your call and bringing that up. That's a different way of looking at it. But we do know that a lot of people who are claiming PTSD, they never even saw combat, Sebastian.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting. I mean, that's a very, very cynical take on the high PTSD rates, and I'm not sure I'm quite ready to jump on that myself. But what I should point out, that what we know, is that only 10% of the U.S. military experiences combat, fires their weapons, gets shot at, sees people die. And around 50%, 5-0, have filed for some form of PTSD disability compensation. So there's 40% in there who... Our caller believes, some of whom are just exploiting the system, defrauding the system. I can't really comment on that. But certainly, a fair number of those people we know weren't traumatized, but they come home and they're very depressed. Typically what they say is, I feel like I don't belong here. I feel like I don't belong in this society. This doesn't feel like home. My hunch is that they're experiencing something that all of us have gotten used to, but they're seeing it with fresh eyes precisely because they've had this very, very close experience overseas, and now it's the contrast that's startling to them, and that is triggering a kind of depression. Peace Corps volunteers as well, who spend 2 years or more in remote villages in developing countries in very intimate circumstances in small communities, right? Exactly our evolutionary past. And then when they come back to this country, a significant number report depression. And they weren't shot at. These people weren't traumatized. And there's no incentive, there's no economic incentive. They're not getting a disability check from the government. But they're many are quite depressed. And so there does seem to be this sort of transition disorder that really doesn't have anything to do with trauma, but is very, very real.
And to Emmanuel's point, the caller, they might be getting a check for PTSD, but they're not getting a check if they commit suicide. And we do know that there is a dramatic increase in the number of veterans who are committing suicide. Another caller.
Let me just jump in on that, because that's also really interesting. We know from the statistics that there's no connection at all between combat and suicide. There's no correlation. All the suicides are tragic. Most of them are Vietnam-era veterans. And we know that the longer the amount of time between a trauma and a suicide, the less likely they are to be connected. And so, in fact, even more weirdly, if you deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan, or if you have deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, you're actually statistically a little bit less likely to commit suicide. So the relationship with suicide is extremely complicated and not very well understood.
Okay. Another caller, Claiborne. Hi, Claiborne. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I wanted to start by disagreeing with the last caller, because PTSD, if you have it, isn't about any check, and most people with it don't go after a check. My PTSD has nothing to do with my service. It comes from the fact that I grew up in the District of Columbia, your nation's capital, post-riots. It looked like Dresden, Germany for the last 40 years. And it was like living it. If you grew up in D.C. or New York during the 70s and 80s, you probably have PTSD, because it was a fight to get from your house to school and back again in one piece. As far as the tribal thing and being in a platoon or a squad or whatever, yes, you bond, because part of the entire system is the guy or girl on your left or your right, you got to protect their life, they got to protect your life, and if they can't, they either get beaten up and or put out. But I think the suburbs, the modern realization of the suburbs is part of the problem, is created fragile people who, you know, they run into problems, it fries their brains, which links to another show you did about the entire grit curriculum thing. That's all I have to say.
All right, Claiborne, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Sebastian, you want to react?
Yeah, I mean, that brings up an interesting point. My research showed that one of the strongest predictors of who will get long-term PTSD is people who were traumatized as children, sexually or violently traumatized as children. That's a very strong predictor of people who will get PTSD after a trauma in their adulthood. And so in a sense, what the guy was saying about growing up in a dangerous and violent and poor neighborhood in Washington, D.C., and the trauma of that, he may or may not have known about these statistics, but in some ways he's kind of onto something.
Some have said that when this phrase, we hear it all the time, we meet veterans and we thank you for your service, but could that actually be a contributing factor? Does that help or hurt the PTSD?
Well, I'm not a veteran, and people say that to plenty of veterans who don't have PTSD, so there's a sort of broader issue. What does the nation owe its soldiers rhetorically? I mean, yeah, exactly. What do you say? Because it's not their war. You know, it's our war. We chose it. We funded it. We sent them over there. They just pulled the trigger for us. But it's our, as civilians, it's our war. So what do you owe? What do we all owe people in our military and veterans? I think the thing that sometimes makes veterans uncomfortable about that sentence is that it just feels too easy. I mean, if there is something owed to the veteran community, that duty can't be discharged so easily by just saying a sentence that doesn't really have much meaning to it. And I think it's like wearing a flag pin, right? I mean, you wear a flag pin and suddenly you're a patriot and you don't actually have to do anything patriotic. You're wearing a flag pin. And so I was talking with someone recently yesterday, and I was like, maybe we should ban flag pins and we'll force people to actually do something real to demonstrate their commitment to the good of this country. And, likewise, maybe we should all stop saying thank you for your service and actually say something meaningful or do something meaningful.
Like fully fund the VA, perhaps.
Like fully fund the VA. Exactly.
So,
I'm telling you, veterans would trade. They would definitely, as far as the veterans I know, would trade never having the thank you for your service again for a fully functional VA. I think a lot of veterans would trade that in a heartbeat.
Now, in your book, you write about how in societies where or times like London during the Blitz, and people were being bombed out, but they were together and they had a sense of unity. And people, the intake into the psychiatric hospital went down. That somehow that as people, as humans, we have this need for adversity, and that brings out the best of our humanity.
Well, I would put it the other way around. We were adapted to deal with adversity, or we wouldn't have survived. And if adversity didn't bring out our best human qualities, we wouldn't be here. And so when there is adversity in modern society, in any society, you don't get mayhem. You don't get a sort of free-for-all where it's every man for himself. What you get is people being extraordinarily generous and concerned and selfless and really coming together in ways that they really don't do in peaceful, affluent circumstances. And so when the Blitz in London, killed 30,000 Londoners, and a lot of people missed the Blitz afterwards because it was a unified society for a little while. The administration thought that the officials thought that there would be mass psychiatric casualties from the bombing, people just freaking out. Actually, admissions to psychiatric wards went down during the bombing. I was in Sarajevo during the war in the early 90s. Terrible. One out of five Sarajevans were killed or wounded by Serb military that had circled that city. It's just one 3-year-long war crime. And I went back there last summer. First time since the war, city's rebuilt, it's beautiful, and this woman who lived through the siege and was badly wounded said to me, she said, things are a lot better now, but frankly, a lot of people miss the war. They miss who they were back then. They feel they were better people. They were more connected. They were more generous, lived for other people. And that's a profound thing to understand about humans. We're complicated.
Well, it seemed like we don't have to have a war going on or being bombed in order to feel a connection to a greater good and try and help people and experience those things.
That would be great. I'm not sure that's the case, but it would be really wonderful if it worked that way.
Any ideas on how to get there?
How many minutes do I have left?
You've got less than one.
All right, I may not finish the thought. One thing that really seems to be good for society is some kind of collective effort towards a common good. I mean, that's sort of a human universal. And the only way to do that in a modern society, a modern country of hundreds of millions of people, is to have national service. I mean, I don't mean the draft. I don't mean forcing people to pick up a gun and fight a war that they don't believe in. There are volunteers who will do that. But a national service that every young person has to engage in that works towards the common good of that country. And there's all kinds of things young people could do, including the Peace Corps, working in poor neighborhoods, whatever, right. Building fences in Montana, whatever it is. And that, I think, would have an enormously positive effect.
Now we're out of time. Sebastian Younger, author of the book Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging, thank you so much.